It is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us here on a Monday morning, and we talk about food, glorious food. And once again, let's bring in Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and it's cold here, too. Not quite as bad as it is up in the refrigerator. But, winter is, in English we say, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. This is very lion weather today, even though it's right mid-March. In Italian, they say marzo è pazzo. March is crazy because you never can depend on the weather in March. In any case, I was all prepared for spring. The crocuses are up here. There's a bunch of daffodils in bloom already mid-March. And then this comes. So I'm back to winter. But actually today I wanted to talk about my life without cooking machines. What got me thinking about this was the last New York Times Magazine column of, now I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Samin Nosrat. Samin has a huge fan base. And this, by the way, this column was written early February, was her last column. She's been writing for 4 years there. I think you do burn out there, but I don't really know why she's leaving. I'm a big fan from the magazine. She has a Netflix TV series, cooking series. I've never watched it. But I hear she's wonderful, and it's wonderful. She's a woman in her early 40s. She grew up in, I believe she grew up in Berkeley, and she ended up being a chef, cook, at the famous restaurant in Berkeley, Chez Panisse, which is the restaurant of Alice Waters. Alice hasn't cooked there in 40 years, but Alice was groundbreaking with that restaurant, and the restaurant is older than I think than Samin is, but at some point Samin cooked there, and Alice was a big fan of hers, and I guess mentored her and helped her career. Alice, by the way, I don't want to go into Alice now. Let's go back to Samin. So Samin's last column really, really spoke to me because she, let me say, it really touched my feelings because she has the same feeling about cooking that I do, which is that everything you do in the kitchen, you learn from somebody. It's like music, and you associate it with parts of your life. Oh, I learned this when I was blah, blah, blah. So-and-so was so nice to me and loved this dish or whatever it is. You know, I have many, many associations between food and people, and mainly food and people, and from all parts of my life. And in fact, there are many things I do in the kitchen that I immediately think of the person who showed me, taught me, or who just I witnessed doing this. I'll give to one little example. Iris Carulli, my former personal assistant for 8 years, she practically lived with Bob and me, and now has for the last, oh, I don't know, could be almost 20 years now, I have to ask her, has been living in Rome. And she married, early in life, she married this Sicilian guy. I happen to know him very well, Renato. And Renato's mother, I can't believe that my friend Suzanne is calling me at this hour. She doesn't realize I'm on the radio. And this phone never rings, but I'll have to just call her back. Anyway, where was I? So Iris and I, because Iris learned a lot about Sicilian cooking from her mother-in-law and did these things in her whole life, and then showed me, taught me. We both have the same habits as her mother-in-law, who's been long dead, by the way. So that's just why. And every time I mash tomato paste into a little hot liquid from the pot, I think of Iris because that's what she always did with a fork on a little saucer or plate, and to dissolve the tomato paste. Of course, we both use the same tomato paste from Syracuse, which is where Iris's mother-in-law was from. Anyway, Samin writes about a pot that I didn't even know about. Is it called an Instapot?
Yeah. Yep.
Pardon me? Do you know about this?
Yeah. I hate the name Instapot. It's a damn pressure cooker.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I am so out of the loop on kitchen equipment, not equipment, but machines. So anything you plug in, I sort of reject. So this is an Instapot, and apparently her friends and even colleagues that she admires told her she has to get an Instapot and cook all her beans. They'll never cook beans again without this. It's a pressure cooker. Who knew? I have cooked beans in the pressure cooker. Could be a good 30 years ago that I was playing around with the pressure cooker and decided this was not for me, even though I have to add to this, since I mentioned Iris. Iris's mother-in-law in Syracuse, old Italian woman, used a pressure cooker, Iris said, almost every day. But you have to be skilled with the pressure cooker to do that, to cook sort of everything in the pressure cooker. In any case, as Samin, I think, very poignantly points out, is it took all the pleasure out of cooking beans. And what she meant by that is, you know, that she has so many associations. And it's such a ritual, a part of her life, as it is part of my life, putting the beans up to soak the night before. In fact, I have a particular ceramic bowl that I like doing that in. And beans, as she points out, she's cooked a lot of beans, this girl. As she points out, beans cook best in pottery, and they do. And that's why even, you know, in Boston they cook the beans in a bean pot, in a ceramic bean pot. So I have many ceramic pots, including a classic Boston bean pot, which I use frequently for cooking small amounts of beans. For large amounts of beans, I have an even bigger version that actually I bought in Tuscany somewhere. And schlepped it home. I don't even know how I carried this by hand. I'm sure I carried it by hand. I carry ceramics by hand, so I carried this home. And beans do cook better. So I even have a bowl that I like to use to soak the beans. And then I like waking up in the morning and seeing the beans have swelled to fill the bowl and almost they're still covered with water, but they're almost near the surface. And I like looking at that and then pouring them into my bean pot and cooking them, which requires me to sit here. Because as the water reduces, it depends on the beans, how long they're going to take to cook. Freshly harvested beans, dried beans, like beans that you can buy in September, those are going to cook very quickly. But beans that have been sitting in your house for a year will cook much less quickly. And I feel, as she does, by the way, that you need to hydrate beans. They do cook better if you... I've tried cooking them without soaking them and doing the quick soak, which is okay, sort of. But really, there's nothing like the ritual of cooking beans. So that's what it's all about. And I'm not buying an Instapot. I don't crave appliances. That's the word. Jill and I were trying to think this morning, what's the word? It's cooking without appliances. Equipment I have plenty of. And I have to say that there are certain things, like little pieces of kitchen equipment that I treasure. For instance, I don't know what it cost, maybe it was $3 or $4, my OXO vegetable peeler. Every time I use that, I say, who invented this? They should get the Nobel Prize for cooking. And I only recently realized, I'm painting the kitchen, so I have to unload all the things in the cabinets. And one of the things that's taking space here is my food processor, which I realized the other day I haven't used in at least 2 years, maybe more, because soon after I bought it, it died. It's a KitchenAid. I'll mention the brand. It's a KitchenAid, and it died almost immediately. And I went to my local appliance store, and I said to him, can you fix this? And he said, well, it depends on what's wrong with it, but chances are it will cost you more to fix it than to buy a new one. So I have not replaced it. It's still taking up space in the cupboard, and I've just decided I'm going to throw it away and forget about food processors. I have my mini processor, which does all the kitchen jobs that I want it to do, and I have a blender. And between the mini processor, which you can buy on sale for $30, and even if it only lasts a few years, you can for $30 you can buy a new one. It takes up almost no space. And what do I need it to do? I need it to I make various what you might call pestos. For instance, today I'm going to make a chimichurri, which is in fact a kind of pesto. It's a parsley pesto. And the reason I'm doing that only is because I found this enormous bunch of absolutely gorgeous, vibrant parsley, and I don't know what to do with it except if I make chimichurri, it'll last a few more days. So, and we'll eat. I can eat chicken with chimichurri. I can eat steak with chimichurri. Just parsley, oil, garlic, hot pepper. That's what it is. Anyway, and salt. Anyway, those are my two main appliances. I have really gotten rid of almost all electronic appliances. I even did, in fact, give away my very expensive Kuhn Recon safety pressure pot, pressure cooker. I don't even have that anymore. But I do have, I looked in the closet this morning, and the only thing that I apparently have saved, and it's way up at the top shelf, is my deep fryer. And I'm not sure why I'm keeping that either, because I deep fry not so frequently these days, but I do deep fry, and I can deep fry in a lot of different pots other than an electric deep fat fryer, which, by the way, only goes up doesn't go up to the mine doesn't even go up to the 375 that I wanted at pretty regularly. And I don't even covet any of these new appliances. For instance, my nephew bought one of these super duper blenders. I forget what you call it. What do you call it? Insta something? I don't know. What do you call those blenders on steroids? I don't know.
Vitamix?
Yeah, that's it. Vitamix is one of them. Yeah, I think that's what he bought. I think it was $600 and something bucks.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
You know, I mean, really. I mean, if I had the counter space or the cupboard space, what I have now, I know I've mentioned this before because I'm extremely fond of this machine. I have my Osterizer blender that was given to me literally 53 years ago by my parents' best friends, Marie and Caesar, when they graduated from their primitive two-speed, high-low speed Osterizer to a more, this is 1967, that is 53 years ago, maybe it's more, could it be? No, it's 53. Anyway, in 1967, they decided to get a blender with multi-speeds, which came out about then, probably. And I was moving into my first apartment at college, and they gave me the blender for my kitchen because I was going to cook for myself. I'm still using the blender, and many, many years later, I was gifted with a Viking blender. You know, the people who make the stoves, I don't even know if they make the blender anymore. At that time, there was a Viking cooking school in Garden City, Long Island, and I used to teach there. And they, in Garden City, and I brought in my blender because the gears stripped on it almost immediately, not the gear, but the whatever you call that, ran the blade at the bottom, which was plastic. It stripped almost immediately. This is, by the way, way back when, a $200 blender. And so the owner of the operator, the manager of the cooking school said, oh, this happens all the time. I said, oh, I thought maybe you could just replace the replacement gear. He says, here's a new one. He says, I'll report that this broke in the school and you can have a new one. I said, you know, I don't want a new one. I'm very happy with my Osterizer from 19. I don't know. Marie and Caesar probably had that blender for 10 years. So it's probably 63 years old. And it still to this day is the only blender you can buy with a glass jar and metal gears that don't strip ever.
Yeah.
You can crush ice. In fact, one of the things I think of when I use my blender is I know that Caesar used this blender for making frozen daiquiris. That was his main use of the blender in those days. He was a real bartender, my Caesar. Anyway, that's the only appliance that I really have attachment to. Although I do like my immersion blender. Now, I did buy an immersion blender when they first came out, and I don't know how long ago that was, but it was quite a while ago. And I use it all the time because I just love the idea of, like, making bean soup. I do make a lot of bean soup, but any kind of vegetable soup that I want pureed. You know, soup of the day in a French bistro is just leftover vegetables, or not even leftover, but could be fresh vegetables, cooked with potato and onion, and then you puree it. Could add a little butter or cream, whatever. I do that a lot. So my immersion blender is perfect for that. Now, in Italy, they sell immersion blenders with cylindrical containers. I don't want to call it a jar. But that so you can put stuff in this cylindrical, usually it's clear, like, I don't know, Lucite?
Yeah.
Or acrylic of some kind. And you can put, like, vegetables in there and then puree them by sticking the stick in the jar. So I was looking all over for this, and I don't know why I couldn't find it. I see them on television in Italy all the time. I've never seen them here either. So I mentioned to Cecilia that I was looking for this, and maybe she knew where I could buy it. This was when we were in Salerno. And the next day she showed up with this beautiful acrylic, Lucite, whatever, pitcher, the right shape, but it was too beautiful to use a blender in it. So I, for many years, used it as my distilled, my filtered water pitcher. It started to look gross recently, so I bought a new pitcher. But I'm still looking. If anybody knows where to find the cylindrical thing, that's what I would use my immersion blender for. My immersion blender is really to stick in a pot, and I do like it for that. Now there is one thing that I toy with, one appliance that I toy with getting, and that is a rotisserie.
I have one.
You do. I know you told me this. You have the Pompeel, I think.
No. I upgraded and got a different one. I got a different one because the Pompeel one was just too big and too cumbersome, and I didn't like the way it worked. And this one works absolutely fantastic.
Well, my only issue with the machine, which I would like to have, is counter space. I know that if it's in a closet and I got to schlep it out every time I want to roast a chicken, I'm not going to do it.
It'll end up
staying in the closet.
That's
and I don't really want to give up counter space for a rotisserie. And I must say, I do like my own spatchcock chicken. And it's better, actually, than any rotisserie chicken I can buy. But I keep thinking, you know, I could make one better than I can buy. And I do like the whole... Because I grew up with a rotisserie machine. We had a roto-broil.
There you go.
Did I talk about rotobroil before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, who invented the rotobroil was a man named, Irving Klinghoffer? And Irving, I'm not sure if it was Irving, but it's definitely Klinghoffer. Klinghoffer is the nasty man who taunted, I guess they were at the time, I think they were Libyan terrorists.
Yeah, and he got thrown off
and
the boat.
And they pushed him, and he was in a wheelchair, yeah. And they pushed him overboard. I didn't know that he had any relation to the rotobroil until many years later, some years later, after he was murdered by the terrorists, I understand. The understanding was he was saying the wrong thing to terrorists. In any case, years later, I talked about the rotobroil on the radio, and his daughter, who lives in Florida, probably about my age, called to tell me the whole history of the rotobroil, and very proud that her father had invented it. What was the innovation? Wasn't, you know, I think Leonardo da Vinci created spits for automatic rotisserie spits for cooking. And in Tuscany, you know, it's the most common thing. And in fact, you can buy, I know, if you have a fireplace, you can buy a rotisserie spit for your fireplace. The only problem, you put a pan under the spit to catch all the drippings. I'm going to make myself hungry talking about this, the potatoes in the pan. But anyway, the innovation of Klinghoffer was that the same coils, that electric coils, that were cooking the chicken in the bottom part of the rotobroil, heated a griddle on the top. So you could actually put a pot and simmer something on the top of the rotobroil as the chicken was cooking, or I never did this. I don't think my grandmother or mother ever did it either, because it probably would have created too much grease in the pan on the top. But you could cook other stuff on top. I think at the most we ever did was put a pot on the top to keep it warm while the chicken was roasting. Anyway, that's about it for me and machines. I have gadgets. If they fit in the drawer, I might buy it. But I do love, and now they're very common, but my friend Suzanne once gave me a lemon, 25 years ago, gave me a lemon press. You know, the kind that is now very common. They're enameled nowadays, and you put a half of a lemon in and you squeeze it with two handles. I must say, it's not to me the most efficient way of getting the juice out of a lemon, but for 20 some odd years, I at least got to think of Suzanne when I did it, and it was a nice yellow one. Finally, I gave up on it because the enamel, after 20 some odd years of being exposed to acid, lemon juice, and lime juice, it started to corrode. And now I'm using an even more primitive kind of lemon press, and that's one I bought many years ago in Mexico. It's the real deal. I don't know what metal it is. It's made of some metal that you look at and you say, I really don't think that's going to stay as nice as it does, but I put it in the dishwasher, it's fine, and I don't wash it immediately, and it's fine, and I think I made coffee, and it sounds like it's ready. I can tell when my coffee is ready by the sound. It stops coming up in the pot. And that's it.
It's interesting.
So I like doing everything by hand. I like, my friend on the phone the other day, a friend said to me, "You mean you still chop vegetables by hand?" I said, "I make brunoise, which is tiny, tiny mince, some dice, by hand, because I find it meditative."
I used to use a pressure cooker a lot, and I don't. I've got a whole set of cookware now, and you know what? America's been dumbed down. If you see all these commercials on TV for these roto broilers, these all-in-one ovens and everything like that.
Let me say, I'm happy that Emeril Lagasse is making some money, but all he does now is demonstrate bad kitchen apparatus, appliances on TV. It's one, And the pasta, listen, do not buy ever a machine that claims it's going to make good pasta. No machine that I know of, unless it's a commercial machine, makes good pasta. None of these machines, I don't even want to go into it. It just doesn't make good pasta.
Arthur, if you ever, for the joke of me, when I had my Popeil thing, I joined a rotisserie forum, right? Well, now lately, tons of people are going on this forum saying, I've got a chicken, I just got an air fryer oven, and how long do I set it for? And the stupidest questions, people don't know that if you put a thermometer and the thing, you'll know when it's done. Honest to God,
well,
Arthur.
So that's a kitchen gadget that I realized recently because all of mine broke and got discarded.
Yeah.
An oven thermometer. Yeah. I really could not live without it. I ran out one day and just, you know, I said, I can't do this without the thermometer. You know, it was in the couple of weeks I was fooling around with slow cooking meat and then searing it after it was cooked.
Yeah.
So I had to take the temperature all the time. And in fact, I've never really gotten this down the way I like it. I've decided, though, that I don't like this final sear method for a steak, for beef, but it works very well for pork, which, of course, you know, I don't want to go into pork, but it's hard to cook pork these days because of the lack of fat. But if you slow cook it and then do a final sear, it's fine.
Oh, if people only knew that, if they just stuck a thermometer in there.
Yeah, exactly. If they just stuck a thermometer. Just, although, you know, some people don't know how to operate a thermometer. It does take some skill to know where to put it and how deep to put it, and da 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 da. But yeah, you know, and nowadays what did I pay for this thermometer? I think I paid $20 for an instant read digital thermometer, or again another OXO product. They make great kitchen gadgets. and no electrical appliances that I know of. If you have to plug it in, as I said, I think a blender and a mini processor is all you need in life.
And if you're going to use a pressure cooker, use a real one that you put on a stove, not an electric one. I just hate those instant. Anyways,
yeah, on a stove. Well, also, the other one is the slow cooker. I don't get slow cookers. I slow cook all the time, and all I do is I put it in my Dutch oven in the oven. At 275, sometimes even 250, and that's a slow cooker to me.
It is, and
it may take 3 hours to cook the roast, the pot roast, but that's what it takes. I mean, really.
Honest God, you're right. It's amazing.
You know, it's another one. I mean, but you know, they're enticing when you see Emeril Lagasse telling you the food's never going to taste as good as this unless you buy my machine.
Bam!
A rice cooker. That's an exception. I understand that if you have a large family, or even just if you're only four, and you eat rice almost every night, I can understand the benefit of a rice cooker. And it might be worth keeping it on your kitchen counter.
All right. Okay, Arthur.
All right. So next week, next week it's Passover, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and Easter's coming up. So there's a lot of food topics.
All right. All right, I'll speak to you next week.
Have a great week, everyone.
Bye-bye, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.